Today on Compassion Radio.
Friday night was pizza night with this family. None of them spoke English and he didn't speak Arabic, but they had pizza every Friday night.
So they actually made the effort to invite them for pizza.
Yeah.
Okay.
The kids ran to his house to say hi in the afternoon before they went into their own home. And then another family that walked past the house every day started checking in with them, realized that they had some health problems and stuff. As they'd walk by, they'd check in. So this family that we put in this random house all of a sudden is becoming integrated into the community because they aren't just around students. They have to build this network, and their neighbors have started to become that network.
This is Compassion Radio with Bram Floria. On this program, Bram spends time with people who live their lives in a missional way, whether it's in a mud hut in remote Africa, a church in war-torn Ukraine, a village in Nepal devastated by an earthquake, or one of the countless Christ-centered ministries in the United States. Bram is there, tirelessly bringing you the life-changing stories of God's love, goodness, and faithfulness. In a world plagued by persecution, ethnic cleansing, genocide, corruption, poverty, and war, refugees and immigrants are often forced to leave homes, possessions, and even loved ones in a desperate effort to live in peace and safety and to find a place to call home. They arrive in the U.S. anxious to work, to contribute, to find new friends, and to belong. I'm Frank Montenegro, and today Bram talks with Jennifer Foy, the executive director of the Triad Office of World Relief in North Carolina. Any preconceived notions about immigrants and refugees? Sit tight, because Jennifer is going to set the record straight as she shares what the Lord is doing through this powerful ministry on behalf of these precious people. Here's the final part of that conversation.
You mentioned the role that World Relief plays in this greater scope of refugee resettlement. There are only 9 agencies that are even licensed to do this in the entire country, and you're one of that mix. How does it fit together, and is it really meeting the need that is out there?
There's always more to do.
Yeah.
I think kind of the transition World Relief is in is we have for a long time been a Christian social service agency. So for the last couple of years, we've really been struggling with this in this transition from being a social service agency to being a resource, but also helping transform community economically, spiritually, socially. And for us, it's this idea of integration. You can have assimilation. We can make everyone look alike. We can make everyone speak alike, eat the same food. But that really isn't what we want. We're transitioning to this idea of integration, where someone is fully who they are, but also fully a part of the community. And that's really where we're heading. And a big part of that is the relational volunteering. You and I, if we pick up our cell phones, have 100, 200 names in there. Something happens, there's always someone we can call. A refugee picks up their phone call. There might be some other refugees in there, but is there really people in there that they can call to show that they're integrating the community, that they have resources in the network? We're really changing how we're looking at resettlement. Because one of the biggest gaps is once we're finished with the social service part of what we do, how are we going to take care of them? What's next? And some do very well, and some just survive after we're not a day-to-day part of it. Yeah. So how do we get beyond that? Survival isn't enough. Paying your bills isn't enough. You and I can pay our bills. Everyone can work a job and pay a bill, but that's not life.
Right.
We're in this process of really transitioning to integrating people in the community, helping people start businesses, helping people find leadership within the community, being on committees, running for office, all these things, and having the community
entering the
represent.
Body politic and being part of the
fabric
of the society and the systems that make this country work. I was talking with friends who had kind of picked up the informal route, which was receiving those needs after the social service agencies had stopped. They were in south of St. Louis. Huge communities and all kinds of different nationalities being dumped on that particular city. And there are a number of other major metropolitan areas that have blight that they're trying to engender new growth within and bringing immigrants into those areas because they're easy to, quote unquote, dump them there. But a lot of the Christian agencies in the area that receive that new opportunity, a new field, are moving in there to get real serious about developing those kind of relationships because they are their neighbors, literally now. And I asked a couple of folks there, how many of these folks that are being resettled now will ever meet or know anybody who's not from their culture? And they said, oh, we just did a study on that. We actually interviewed all the people we've met and asked them how many other folks they knew in degrees of separation study. 5% of these refugees will ever have somebody that's not from their culture or not from the government that inspects them ever step over their threshold and sit down with them.
Yeah.
And that scared me. I think about the ghettoizing that's happening in Europe right now and how dangerous it's become and how radicalized so many neighborhoods in Belgium and France have become because no one has ever crossed the threshold to get to know the community.
And I think that's one of the things that tends to happen because housing is a unique challenge for refugee resettlement agencies. Mm-hmm. So you're asking a landlord to rent you a house, not to put your name on it, but someone who isn't yet in the country, they have no credit, they have no social security number. You're asking them to take a big leap of faith. Most agencies find one or two apartment complexes and everyone goes there. And so you get that ghettoizing. Yeah. But in a really strange blessing, primarily in High Point. In Winston, we have one. But in High Point and Winston, we don't usually put people in apartment complexes.
It's very suburban and leafy and green and spreads out over the hills.
Yeah, but I mean, there are apartment complexes, but we just haven't built a relationship with one. Mm. So everyone goes into single family homes. Mm. And so all of our families are spread throughout the city. So there's no ghetto of refugees. Now, there are some older communities where the Burmese or Bhutanese community have decided we're going to buy these homes or we're all going to try and rent homes at this apartment because we want to be together. Mm-hmm. But in general, the refugees are spread throughout the city of High Point. And it's kind of this beautiful thing because they are truly mixed in with the community. And unlike other cities, you can't go find the refugee community in that way. It's preventing some of that ghettoization and forcing people to meet their neighbors. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a Syrian family here in town. Both of the parents had significant medical needs and they had a few children. And we placed them in a little house. Right after we put them there, there was conflict with the neighbor because they didn't know which trash can was theirs. And so they just put trash in the trash can near their house. Yeah. And so it became a little bit of conflict. And after a while, they got to know each other. Within a couple months, all of a sudden, the one neighbor, Friday night was pizza night. Once he figured out pepperoni was pork and it was not appropriate for the Syrian family. Friday night was pizza night with this family. None of them spoke English and he didn't speak Arabic, but they had pizza every Friday night.
So they actually made the effort to invite them for pizza.
Yeah.
Okay.
The kids ran to his house to say hi in the afternoon before they went into their own home. Mm. And then another family that walked past the house every day started checking in with them, realized that they had some health problems. And so as they'd walk by, they'd check in. So this family that we put in this random house all of a sudden is becoming integrated into the community because they aren't just around Syrians. They have to build this network. And their neighbors have started to become that network and take care of
them. And it's beautiful when it happens well. Mm-hmm. I imagine not every situation is as easy.
Correct.
So how do you as an agency, working with the Christians in the community around you, tackle the underlying racism that can be part of any community? And not just overt racism or something systematic, but just the latent uneasiness of anything not like what I'm used to.
You know, as much as we can, if we know of something, if we put a family in a house and we know that something's going on, the person next door, we'll approach and talk to them and ease their concerns, give them a card, call us if you have questions. But we do a lot of community outreach. We try and invite the community in to see and understand. And if there's someone that doesn't understand or doesn't agree, doesn't want the people here, we encourage them. We understand you're not comfortable with this. If you have questions, come talk to us. I try and get people again to sit down to a meal because it's amazing how views change. But then we also just kind of prepare the refugees and explain to them, this is why some people don't understand. Your behaviors and your actions not only will influence your relationship with that person, but generations to come. So there's a lot of education, both of the Americans, but also the refugees. We talk to them a lot about the weight of their responsibility in how the whole refugee community is perceived.
Yeah, and those coming behind them are depending upon their example and their courage, too.
Yeah, so we do a lot of education within the community of refugees and the American community on both sides differently, how to approach the struggle. In the last year, I've had refugees come to me and say, does America still want me? They see the news, they hear everything. And we talk about it and say, you know, there are some that don't. But we do. And this is how we show you that we do and encourage them that way. And they become amazing stories for how it's transforming. 10% of the city of High Point are refugees, which is a number that just is baffling.
Yeah.
And there are people in the city that don't know that there are refugees in town.
There's not been a time I've sat in a refugee camp in the Middle East or in Central Africa where you actually hear the story and why they're even there to start with. You don't look at it and say, God forbid that I should not provide welcome to these people. If they came to my town, I'd take them in and want to know them because mm-hmm. God literally made me sensitive to their story. And I've had people say to me, even through our feedback forms on our website, you've turned into a bleeding heart liberal. I don't want to have anything to do with this. I thought, my heart's learned to bleed, certainly, because I've been willing to actually hear what suffering really means for people. And I've become sensitive to that. But I've become, I think, in many ways, more and more conservative over the years, saying we have to buckle down to the bare essentials of what it means to be a Christ follower. And those things are not about my ideas for how to save the world. They're about God's empirical data. All through history, he has demanded of his followers they act in a certain specific way to provide a way of entry and a way of showing that he is intimately involved with the affairs of men and cares deeply about them. And he cares about those who must care for those who need help. He's very involved in this. So my heart's bleeding, or at least pumping, in ways I never thought they would by sitting down and sharing that meal.
You're listening to Compassion Radio with Bram Floria. There's a lot more coming up, so please stay with us. Here's a word from Bram Floria.
Hi, friends. Just a quick note to say thanks for your encouragement and support through these summer months. We've made some real progress in our summer giving appeal, but we have a long ways to go before we meet our goal. I hope that you've been praying about how you can partner with this one-of-a-kind radio ministry. We're here to encourage and inspire you in your daily faith walk and to challenge you to live it out in practical ways right where you live and around the world. All of the guests on Compassion Radio are invited to share their moving and motivational stories so that you will benefit and so that they will receive the kind of support they richly deserve. And you make it possible. Without your generous support, these stories would never make it on the air to your ears and hearts. If you haven't supported the unique mission of Compassion Radio before, I hope you'll choose now to do so. If you have supported us in the past, please keep it up. And thank you for making Compassion Radio part of your day. God bless you.
If you'd like to support Compassion Radio, call 800-868-2478 right now or go to CompassionRadio.com. That's 800-868-2478 or CompassionRadio.com. If you'd like to make your giving super easy, you can just text the word COMPASSION to 53445. That's the word COMPASSION to 53445. You can also mail your tax-deductible donation to Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That's P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And thank you so much.
You're listening to Compassion Radio with Bram Floria.
I try and get people again to sit down to a meal because it's amazing how views change. But then we also just kind of prepare the refugees and explain to them, this is why some people don't understand. Your behaviors and your actions not only will influence your relationship with that person, but generations to come. So there's a lot of education, both of the Americans, but also the refugees. We talk to them a lot about the weight of their responsibility in how the whole refugee community is perceived.
Yeah, and those coming behind them are depending upon their example and their courage, too.
Yeah, so we do a lot of education within the community of refugees and the American community on both sides differently, how to approach the struggle. In the last year, I've had refugees come to me and say, does America still want me? They see the news, they hear everything. And we talk about it and say, you know, there are some that don't. But we do. And this is how we show you that we do and encourage them that way. And they become amazing stories for how it's transforming. 10% of the city of High Point are refugees, which is a number that just is baffling.
Yeah.
And there are people in the city that don't know that there are refugees in town.
There's not been a time I've sat in a refugee camp in the Middle East or in Central Africa where you actually hear the story and why they're even there to start with. You don't look at it and say, God forbid that I should not provide welcome to these people. If they came to my town, I'd take them in and want to know them because God literally made me sensitive to their story. And I've had people say to me, even through our feedback forms on our website, you've turned into a bleeding heart liberal. I don't want to have anything to do with this. I thought, my heart's learned to bleed, certainly, because I've been willing to actually hear what suffering really means for people. And I've become sensitive to that. But I've become, I think, in many ways, more and more conservative over the years, saying we have to buckle down to the bare essentials of what it means to be a Christ follower. And those things are not about my ideas for how to save the world. They're about God's empirical data. All through history, he has demanded of his followers they act in a certain specific way to provide a way of entry and a way of showing that he is intimately involved with the affairs of men and cares deeply about them. And he cares about those who must care for those who need help. He's very involved in this. So my heart's bleeding, or at least pumping, in ways I never thought they would by sitting down and sharing that meal. So what do you find is the biggest aha moment that comes from people when you sit down with them? Maybe they don't even realize that there are these many families in their community that are refugees. And you are now in an opportunity of saying, okay, I want to tell you this big story of what God's doing in this generation and the people that are around you have not even met yet. What is the greatest misunderstanding or falsehood or false idea that you dispel when you sit down with Christians in this country?
I think, you know, a lot of times the place that gets people to open their hearts a little bit is actually sharing some just numbers, because they all know that we have stories, sad stories that we can tell that can make someone's heart just say, oh.
Yeah.
So a lot of times I end up just kind of throwing out some numbers. One, it's 10% of the city. I explained to him what happens to these people is that we pick them up from somewhere else in the world. We drop them in the United States and tell them they have 90 days to get a job, to learn the language, and pay their bills. Because in 90 days, we're done.
Right.
So if I pick you up and drop you somewhere else in the world, can you become fully self-sufficient in 90 days?
Let's put that in personal terms. You, yourself, or somebody you know is going to get dropped into Kazakhstan and drop on a street corner with maybe $50 in their pocket of local currency and said, go at it, guys. We'll check in on you in 90 days and see how you're doing. And that's all we're responsible for.
Yeah, and you need to get a job. You need to maintain a house. You need to feed your family. And you need to pay all your bills within 90 days. Yeah. We'll help you out for the first 90 days, but at that point, we're done. And then I'm able to tell them 90% of refugees arriving here exceeded that in 90 days.
That is amazing.
I have a hard time picturing myself being able to do it. I just think about what horrible refugees Americans would be. And yet, these people are coming and they're doing it every day. There are a few that struggle. I would never hide it. Just like in Americans, we run into domestic violence issues. We run into people who find alcohol. Those things come up. But 90% of refugees arriving to our town are self-sufficient within 90 days. I don't think most Americans could achieve that if we dumped them in a third world country.
And God bless the employers that saw something in their work ethic, say, I want to take a risk on this person. And there are probably new people every day that discover that, hey, I got hard workers here. I need to actually tap into that strength that I find in this community. And their hearts soften or think twice about their politics, which may, on the surface, limit their thinking about the potential of the people around them.
You see a lot of employers that talk about how the refugees actually improve the workplace, not because they're taking American jobs or something, but there's a difference in work ethic and pride in their job. Understanding that most refugees have spent between 8 and 17 years in the camp. They haven't been allowed to make their own money. They haven't been allowed to do their own thing. They get a job and there's so much pride in getting this job and being able to provide for yourself that they take that job to a whole new level. And the Americans start looking around going, I've been kind of slacking. And it kind of raises the level of expectation across the board. So a lot of employers see the benefit of having the refugees and what they teach their American counterparts in the workplace.
Yeah. I've been reading recently that the measurements of American productivity, where that's rising, has to do with communities that are in transition. Lots of immigrants coming in or retooling for new industries, social upheaval that's moving people around, actually produces more productivity. So it's not a gentle way of doing things, kind of like saying that the church grew because God threw the diaspora around the world. Indeed, he did.
Yeah.
He did it through persecution. And so we have to look at our own history and say, if we are truly tapped into our Christian roots, we got to recognize that all of us are spiritual refugees. We come from that stock. The gospel came to us because God made refugees of his own family and sent them to places that could not have been imagined. And therefore, world history changed. And we're the beneficiaries of that. We're also the responsible parties that have to bear the sins of our past, too, and say, this is where our worst angels come to play. This is also where God's best grace comes into play. We're in the middle of all that right now. It's a messy work.
It is.
And I wish it was in some ways sterile, clean, that we didn't have to worry about anything ever going wrong.
But we wouldn't appreciate it if it was.
Probably not. So, any other words you'd like to throw in, Jennifer, about what it's like to be in this century, in this time, working with these generations of new immigrants?
You know, I think one of the things that I see is, in so many ways, we have a long way to go, but I see the church stepping up.
Good.
There has been an outpouring of love. The harder and harder things get politically, the more I see the church stepping up. And it's not any one denomination, but I see Christians stepping in. We went from 2 years ago, probably 300, 350 volunteers, to now over 750 active volunteers.
Awesome.
It's hard to turn away from that and not see that maybe God is using this time of pruning and struggle to build us in the way he really wants us, which is community-led, community-driven, and the church really having a role in this.
Yeah. The kingdom's not going to grow without the kingdom stepping up to grow.
And that's it.
God has put a lot of tools in our hands to get busy tilling the field, but this wasn't supposed to be easy. This is supposed to be productive.
And we wouldn't appreciate it if it was easy. Yeah.
And I'm thrilled when I get to see the church alive in many other countries stepping in the same way and saying, well, God's bringing them to our country, so let's get busy. Mm-hmm. And they're doing it in, as we would say, a very evangelical way, saying God's grace is big. He's living it out through me, and I want you to know it too. It's transformed my life.
Yeah.
And therefore, because he's transformed me, you have a home and a safe place with me. This is refuge here. And we build the concept of refuge into our families, that families are safe. And our family is safe for your family. The kingdom really doesn't just multiply, it grows. It flourishes.
Yeah.
And I know you see that every time you step into a family that has opened their doors and their hearts to refugees and other kinds of immigrants that come to us. Their families often come alive.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids get to see the world through a whole new lens, and they become much more world aware.
Yeah. I have 5 godchildren. Mm. They have completely adopted our refugee family into that group. And so, you know, Christmas or whatever holiday, there's no difference. They are fully enveloped, but you also hear the conversations. They're sitting in a different room and you'll overhear them talking about what this means in school or how to do it. And so there's this mentorship and sharing that happens. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
And so the family is teaching each other in both directions and learning a lot.
I'm sure that the culture of World Relief is one of dependency and focus and energy and prayer, believing that God's going to transform situations as he lays on our hearts the things to lift up to him. Would you consider praying over the people that are hearing this program and over your people that you're leading and serving in a way that we could be able to enter into prayer with you?
Sure. Lord, thank you for this time, for the ability to share about the work that you're doing in our community. I ask that you continue to lead people to serve and open their hearts and their homes to your people that are arriving in our community every day. The immigrants and refugees have so much to teach us about you. Whether they are believers or not, somehow they teach us all lessons. Lord, I ask that you watch over those people who have opened their homes, help them to receive well. Watch over the staff across the country that are serving refugees. They face a lot of uncertainty and unknowns these days. Give them strength, give them wisdom, and help them to be great teachers to our churches and our communities on how best to serve. In your name we pray. Amen. Amen.
If you've missed any part of today's broadcast, you can listen again anytime just by opening up a browser on your computer, smartphone, or tablet and going to CompassionRadio.com. While you're there, go ahead and check out our newsletter to find out more about this ministry. And please think about signing up for our email updates. Again, it's CompassionRadio.com. Now, if this broadcast is a blessing to you, would you please consider 3 things? First, please pray for us. Your prayers are vital to the effectiveness of this ministry. Second, would you please tell a friend about Compassion Radio? Sharing this broadcast will help us reach as many people as possible with the encouraging reports Bram brings us from the mission field, both here in the U.S. and abroad. And finally, would you please consider supporting this ministry financially? Compassion Radio is 100% listener supported. That means it's your gifts that make it possible for us to continue. Now, there's a couple of ways you can get a hold of us. You can call us right now at 800-868-8255. 2478, or you can go to CompassionRadio.com, and when you're there, just click on the donate button. Again, it's 800-868-2478, or CompassionRadio.com. Now, if you'd really like to make your giving super easy, you can just text the word COMPASSION to 53445. That's the word COMPASSION, COMPASSION, to 53445. And last but certainly not least, if you want to go old school and mail us your tax-deductible donation, great. Just send it to Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That's P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Thanks a lot. And thanks for taking time out of your busy day to listen. We are so very thankful for you. And please be sure to join us again for more Compassion Radio with Bram Floria. This program is sponsored by Compassion Radio Ministries and your generous financial support.